Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
If you've got electricity at your house, I'm envious of you. I don't have it yet at my house. Scott Lakem, the athletic director, University of Portland, I know he was without power. Did you get your power back?
My home studio does have power, John. I'm lucky.
There you go. You got it back on. What did you learn in the last 72 hours or so about, your ability to cope with no electricity?
I learned that my kids are much better at board games than I am. I think that's the key thing I learned.
Oh, man. Humility. What do you guys play?
A little Sorry, a little Monopoly. I kept trying different things, and I lost at all of them, so it's all good.
Yeah, Sorry's one of our favorites in our household. Let's talk about Terry Porter, your men's basketball coach. You reached a mutual understanding with him this season. I think a lot of people expected it last year. How did that? What was the final thing for you where you realized, okay, we have to do this now?
Well, John, I think we had come to the point, and I mentioned to Terry that it was clear that we weren't going to be together next year. Looking forward, I had not intended to do it during the year. I think you and I talked in March, and the intent was, let's get through this year, because there's been a lot of disruption this year for our student athletes already. We've had 15 schedule changes, 5 or 6 in the last 3 weeks. I mean, the disruption has been high, but we got to the point where I think with everything swirling around it and the understanding that, he wouldn't be back next year, the status quo had become disruptive too, and you and I know it has nothing to do with Terry as a person. There's not a better person who was an ultimate gentleman the day he stepped on campus and until the end. But we realized it was time to give one of our assistants a shot for the last month of the year and start to look to the future.
Terry's reaction to that, is that a conversation you have in person? Is it a phone call in a pandemic? I know things are different.
I've heard of multiple ways. You have to have that conversation in person. I think ethically to give that person a chance to talk. And he was like anything else, John. They're generally not the longest conversations and not the most pleasant, but he was, as always, was a perfect gentleman.
43-103. What were you looking for from him? That's his record in his time at UP. But what did you need to see? What could he have done this year that would have changed your mind? Or was it just, it felt like it was more of the same?
Oh, I thought we did some good things in non-conference, right? We beat Oregon State, beat a good Montana State team, beat Portland State again. Thought we were seeing some things. But our conference record has been chronicled, and we needed to see some movement in conference play, right? And I'm aware of where Gonzaga is. I'm aware of where BYU is. But, we overlay our resources and what we're doing in all our programs. And there's no reason we shouldn't be competing with San Diego, LMU, Pepperdine, San Francisco, Pacific. And that's where we got to be.
What are you looking for in the next coach? You have an advantage here in that you're early and you get to look around a little bit and you don't have a lot of competition for some coaches who are out there.
Yeah, early helps. There's no question. It'll get crowded, so you try to do as much legwork respectfully as you can now to perhaps create a relationship with somebody and lock them up the day a season is over. And we're working on that as we speak. I've had a couple calls today and a couple yesterday. We're looking for three things, John. We're looking for player development. How most programs start to build, including the good ones at our program, is you keep kids for 3 or 4 years, right? You find that kid from Eugene or Salt Lake or San Diego that's going to be a pretty good player in your core in year 3 or 4. We can't afford to turn and burn a roster every year. We've got to get kids in and develop them to the best of our ability. You got to create a culture of trust and accountability with the student athletes and the staff and the department. I think that's important. And then the recruiting piece. I think there's a couple angles for us in particular. We need to get back, and you and I have talked about this, the Oregon-Washington piece is huge. You're not going to fill a roster of 15, perhaps, with that, but they're your core. They're often the kids that develop and stay with you for 4 years. And there's talent for them to be important pieces of your roster. I also think for us, the international component. I mean, you see it with Nick Carlin-Voigt in men's soccer and Rob Connor in cross country and Mike Meek in women's basketball. We have an institution that's been very open to that. We're working those angles in a lot of programs successfully, and that's something we've got to do in men's basketball.
It's interesting. You know, you mentioned the Oregon-Washington piece. Does that hire need to have ties to the region?
It helps, but you're going to have three people in suits next to you on the bench, and ideally there is somebody at least on the staff that's got a pretty good handle or the relationships in the AAU community here. And we need to get back to, I think one of the things Coach Revenue did very well is we had high school coaches at our practices every day, right? I think we need to build those relationships and that pipeline locally.
It's interesting, you know, you look back at what Eric Revenue did, and is there any part of you that considers Revenue now that he's done the, you know, sort of got some, you know, got the vote out and has sort of rebuilt himself, had experience as an assistant again at a major college program? Is Eric Revenue on the radar here, or is that something you just don't do? You don't go back and date somebody you already dated?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I'll be honest, I haven't talked to Eric since we made the move, but I'll tell you there's things Eric did here that we'll want to emulate going forward. I think what you're looking at is, what did Eric do well? What does Mike Meek do well? What does Nick Carlin-Voigt do well? What are those things that have worked well at our university? And put those together and see if we can find that right fit. Because you and I both know, you've been doing this a long time, there's 40, 50 guys that could do this job, X's and O's, right, and could get players. Who's that candidate that could do that and fit the best on our campus?
We're talking to Scott Lakem, Athletic Director, University of Portland. Does your hire have to have head coaching experience? Are you willing to take a shot on somebody who doesn't have Division I head coach experience?
Absolutely. I think the D2, D3 model, you know, can work, right? And look around our league. Was Mark Few a head coach before? Granted, he was in a pretty good spot. Was Randy Bennett a head coach before? No, neither one of them was. I don't think you necessarily have to be. And, you know, I like the D2, D3 model, too. It's proven that you can recruit, you can build your own culture, and run your own shop. And we're a small campus. I mean, from the non-basketball side, a lot of the way we're Division II, Division III size on the enrollment end. So it doesn't have to be somebody that's been a D1 head coach, no.
It's interesting that the feedback you're getting from players. I'm assuming that you talk to players as you make this move, or you talk to a couple of the more veteran players or players who would be coming back. How much do you take what they have to say into consideration as you sort of frame the search?
You always listen to your student athletes. We generally will have them involved at some point on the search too, to meet the candidate and see how people connect. I think where they can really help you, and I've had a handful of them on my couch the last few weeks, is, you know, what do we need? What are we looking for? What's the accountability? What's the culture? What's the academic accountability? What's the system? I think the best thing I can do is just sit in the chair and listen to their ideas. And, you know, no two ideas are the same, but get as much thoughts from them as possible. We do that in every search.
You know, you see some programs that will go out and they'll hire a search firm, or some universities and they'll hire a search firm. But I often feel that, yeah, you know, that's not necessary, especially if you really want that hands-on experience or you want to lean into your relationships. I'm told you're not going to hire a search firm. Why not?
I'd like to put that money back in the program, John. I think that's a big part of it. And there's good search firms out there, and there's good people, and we've used them before. I think this is a unique situation in COVID. Is a lot of why we would use a search firm is just the work that goes around a search, right? The buckets of calls from the agents and candidates and background checks and collecting materials is a lot of work. The reality is we have some staff right now that don't have as much to do because we don't have fans and we're not at full speed yet. So administratively, this is something we could manage in a COVID world.
We're talking to Scott Lakem, University of Portland Athletic Director. Now, you've seen some universities that sort of fall into a pattern of hiring. At Oregon State, you know, they had a home run with Scott Ruick, and then they decided, you know, what we need to be doing is looking for, you know, coaches that are at smaller conferences or even D2 or NAIA, and they get Wayne Tinkle in men's basketball. You've hit a home run in women's basketball with your coach, and you should have been in the NCAA tournament last year. Is that something that will one of your candidates be a D2 or NAIA level coach?
Absolutely. And those are some of the people we're looking at. I think Mike is the most public of them, but we hired a baseball coach from that same conference who has us turned around. We were 12-2 when we went down last year and should be really good this year. Our men's soccer coach is a Division III student athlete. I think they understand a lot of how UP works and the day-to-day intricacies of a small campus and how the relationships are. So it's definitely a place we will look.
You've got Gonzaga.
And it's a weird time to look at it because a lot of those schools aren't playing this year.
That's right.
But doing your best to kind of roll through it all.
You've got Gonzaga in the conference. It's a challenge. You have some others that have been just very good. Everyone always talks about wanting to be the next Gonzaga. But how close can you get at UP? Or what is the angle or the identity that you want to have?
I think the Gonzaga piece helps us. I think some people will think, it hurts. You're chasing Gonzaga, you're chasing BYU or St. Mary's, you're playing for third, you're playing for fourth. There's a lot of kids out there in the recruiting world that want to play against Gonzaga. They want to be on ESPN, right? So our conference, now that we're a top eight, top nine league, I think it helps. It's absolutely, you want to be in Gonzaga's rearview mirror. You want to get to the point where you're a threat to them. I think like BYU and St. Mary's have been. But this is a process, right? As I mentioned at the start, let's start knocking off San Diego and LMU and Santa Clara. This is a step-by-step basis, and you're not going to get there overnight. And how did Gonzaga get there at the start? They got there with Northwest kids, and they built it a year at a time, right? And they built it with a good culture, and they built it with player development, and now they're obviously at a different level with some one-and-done kids. But you got to start somewhere.
We're talking to Scott Lakem, Athletic Director, University of Portland. The conference, the WCC, has come out and said that the seeding for conference tournament will be based on, it's a different format, some conference win percentage. Clearly, I think we're talking about the women's program here, but how do you feel about sort of entering a postseason or March Madness that's going to be unlike any other?
Well, I voted against that plan. I think for a league like us, I thought we should have used the net, because everything we need to be thinking about is how do we get as many teams in the tournament as possible. And conference tournaments are a really good question. You and I could talk about this for an hour. But if I'm Gonzaga, does it make sense to risk exposure and injury in a conference tournament before going to the bubble? Same with BYU. And if I'm those schools, I'm not sure it does. So I think we're going to be something to keep an eye on the next couple of weeks, what happens with conference tournaments. I know they're important to conference and the revenue, and we have a terrific commissioner who's got the right eye on it. But if I'm some of these schools, I'm not sure I do it, John. I'll just be honest.
Yeah, so like, for example, if you're Gonzaga and BYU, you're sort of saying, like, do those programs go, look, we're in the tournament anyway, we're not going to participate in the conference tournament, then does that leave the automatic bid for somebody who's third, fourth, fifth is in the conference?
That's a really good question, and that's something I think we have to hear from the NCAA Men's Basketball Committee, right? And at that point, and this is hypothetical, right? If your top two schools decide not to compete and there's no AQ, then does it make sense to have a conference tournament, right? If I'm a top team and I know I have my ticket in, and it's no disrespect to the conference, but A, it's another chance to get injury, and B, what if you get a COVID case there? You miss the NCAA tournament. That's not good.
So, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, seeing BYU and or Gonzaga opting out and just going, hey, we're not going to be part of it. I know the Pac-12's looking at a similar thing. They need quality wins, and like every conference is trying to get as many teams in as possible, aren't they?
Yeah, that's where the money is. I mean, because you roll back a year, we got no NCAA tournament money, which is a disaster. Two straight years of no NCAA tournament is a catastrophe. I mean, that's something financially for conference offices. That's how they keep the lights on. That's how they pay salaries. That's how conference offices operate. It's not a huge hit to us, but for every league in Division I in America, that's a mess to not have a tournament 2 years in a row. So the more teams we can get in, the more units. I just got off a AD call in the conference. We're trying to figure out, what do we do with the last couple weeks? You know, what puts Gonzaga, BYU, St. Mary's, Pepperdine in the best chance the next couple weeks from a scheduling perspective to get the best seed possible or get into the discussion somehow? We're making up a schedule as we go along. I've never seen anything like it, and hope I never see it again.
Yeah, I think the Pac-12's in the same boat. They've got, you know, UCLA, USC, Oregon, and they're trying to get, like, how do we get another team in there? How do we get quality wins without killing your top three teams? Because you know if you're getting quality wins in the conference, you are you're eroding the case of one of your top three teams. So I think it's really tricky. What is sort of the scuttlebutt among ADs now? Because everybody's got a hole in their budget. Everybody's trying to be creative. At UP, what did the pandemic cost your bottom line?
Well, it cost us every dollar of ticket revenue. I mean, it cost us well into the seven figures, honestly. There's some places you're saving money, right, because you have some sports that don't generate revenue that weren't played. But it was a seven-figure hit, and we've had to make some budget cuts to help the university. You and I have talked about in the past, admissions is the bread and butter for every private school in America, and it's a tough battle for us. I think our admissions group is doing great, but we took a little hit on enrollment this year, not huge, and we're still doing fine, but you know, private schools can't afford for this to extend 3, 4, 5 years where, you know, for us, we need California students to keep coming to UP. So we need things to open up so that'll happen.
Yeah, and I keep thinking, you know, it's, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. We're all hopeful with the vaccine and, you know, that the future will be a little more normal, but what are your expectations for March and pulling off that tournament in Indianapolis and then into next season? Are you confident that next basketball season you're going to have fans inside the Child Center?
I am. I'm confident, I think, at some level that we'll get to the point we'll have at least parents in the house for baseball and soccer by the end of this spring. From an outdoor perspective, it's going to be a slog, though, John. And, you know, I look at, we're probably still going to have to test, right? And that's well into the six figures that extends. I think some places that we've learned, for example, men's basketball, I think we learned a great scheduling lesson this year. We didn't leave the Northwest, right? Why would we play, not to pick on anybody, but why would we play Florida A&M and Abilene Christian if we could play Seattle U twice and Portland State and Oregon State? I was talking to Rob Mullins. This is my ninth year here. The first time we've played the Ducks in my 9 years. Why wouldn't we play a guarantee game there instead of going to USC or the Midwest? I think it's causing all of us, from an AD scuttle point standpoint, to really rethink how we schedule and how we travel and the money we're spending there.
I think it's fascinating to see how everything comes out of this. The timeline for your hire, would you like to make a hire on or around or before the Final Four? The men's Final Four concludes.
Well, I'm about 0 for 10 when I've set timelines on hires in the past. The goal would be to hire somebody right after they've finished their season, you know, and I hope for that person it's not too early. But my hope would be to have it done sometime in March with, you know, some of the candidates we've kind of got on the board right now. We've got their conference tournament dates on the board and other places. Hopefully we can lock them up immediately after that season's over to get them on the road recruiting. And it's a different world recruiting now, right, with the transfer portal I mean, I expect, fully expect, that the you won't have to sit out a year when you transfer in basketball anymore. So we've got to get somebody out right away to start beating the bushes, whether it be on Zoom or otherwise, and get the recruiting process started.
Scott Lakem, I appreciate you. Athletic Director, University of Portland. Thanks for popping on with us.
John, thanks for all you do. Appreciate it.
All right, there he is. Interesting stuff. Fascinating stuff about sort of the hiring process. I'm into that. But I got to tell you, I'm going to leave that conversation thinking about Gonzaga and BYU. And it makes sense to me now that you've got a bunch of programs in major conferences who are looking around going, you know, we need to meet and talk about strategy for our conference tournament. If you're the Pac-12 and you are interested in getting as many teams as possible in the postseason, do you allow your top teams to opt out, UCLA, USC, Oregon, opening the door for a fourth team to get the automatic bid from the conference? It's dangerous, and it could potentially hurt your seeding. It's not like you're going to get, you don't have one of the top 16 teams coming out of last week. You're not going to have one of the top 16 teams going into the Selection Sunday if you don't allow those teams to play deep into your conference tournament. But you might get a fourth team in, or you could ensure that you get a fourth team in if you're the Pac-12. Keep an eye on that. Punch It Audio is coming up. A lot of rumors and speculation flying around about the future of movie theaters. Not happy yesterday when somebody told me, I asked a business owner about the movie theaters. I said, what's going to happen to these movie theaters? Are they going to come back? Can we get a bailout for the movie theaters? Selfishly, like to see that. I know, I'm going to get criticized for this, but I like going to the movies. And I know some movie theaters have been allowed to reopen, but some of the national chains are talking about, you know, are they ever going to reopen? Or do they reopen after the blockbuster movie season comes out here with, the spring movie season? Or how do you sort of manage the reopening of theaters? And some of those theaters, they've lost $700 million in losses by not being open. And I'm not going to be satisfied. I got to be honest, this is a little bit of a hashtag first world problem. But I'm not going to be happy going to a movie theater unless I can get a bucket of popcorn. If we can't get a safe bucket of popcorn, can we really be safe in a movie theater? That is a question. Like, I need these places to survive. But apparently, several of the movie theater chains, including Regal Cinemas, have not made any rent payments since the beginning of the pandemic. So they are being sued by a variety of mall owners over not paying their leases. And apparently this is going to get nasty. But I'm just wondering, like, do you guys have, Zach and Peter, kind of a first world problem that, you know, you wouldn't want to publicly bring up? Like, this is not something I should be publicly bringing up because there are, like, way more important things going on. And people are still without power. And by the way, people are sick and there's a pandemic and all that and the economy and everything. I get it. But I'm still saying, damn it, that movie theater experience, I want it back. Do you guys have something like that?
I sort of experienced one yesterday where, and granted, everyone's dealing with the power and the scenario of things, but our snow shovel wasn't as big as the neighbor's snow shovel, and we were kind of griping about that because he had the big, it looked like one of those asphalt shovels where we had the flat, maybe, 18-incher, and so we kind of griped.
So you're saying that your neighbor has a bigger shovel than you.
Exactly.
Is it longer than your shovel?
I think
or
it was.
Is it wider than your shovel?
I think both. I'm embarrassed to say it. Both.
Maybe you could get a shovel and larger.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, get like a pump for the shovel. Yeah.
Zach, do you have something like that?
Nothing specific like that, really, but I do just miss getting out and going to a restaurant and just being served a nice meal and having a nice drink and, I don't know, just kind of that, the enjoyment of that service is something that I definitely am missing right now, and just the social aspect of it all as well.
You got some restaurants reopening, but, you know, limited capacity, like 25% capacity, but you have some of that going on. Because there's things like that throughout the pandemic, like, I have to play by different rules than regular people. Like, I'll encounter friends and they'll say, man, I don't like, and then they'll, you know, I should be allowed in the football stadium, you know? And, like, I can't say that on air. Like, I can't come on air and say, I miss the movie theater so much that, like, I really hope they come back and I can have my bucket of popcorn while people are dying, right? So, I have to say it with, like, this is totally a first world problem issue, but, man, that's when, in my mind, we'll be back to normal. Like, Zach, you'll be eating in a restaurant. You won't have to worry. Peter's snow shovel will have the length and girth that he wants it to have. And I will be in a movie theater watching previews, eating popcorn, and happy as ever regulator cup.
You know, John, I would actually say the sauna. I just thought of it right now. But my gym routine and just being in the sauna, and I know that's something that is probably far away from happening just because of, you know, sweating and being so close to people in there and breathing and whatnot in a small, confined environment. But, man, do I miss the sauna.
You know, it'd be interesting if we could get a news conference with Dr. Anthony Fauci and we could say, yes, we understand that masking up is good and the vaccine is helpful, but Dr. Fauci, when do you think saunas will reopen? Zach wants to know. Can you imagine his reaction?
Yeah.
Like, saunas, not on the radar. That'll be the last thing that'll be back. Making out with strangers comes back like a second and a half after saunas come back.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.